CorporalNetwork.com.
This episode of The Tome Show, Gen Con 2010 Special, is brought to you by Noble Knight Games, where Out of Stock is available again. And listeners like you, thanks for using The Tome's Amazon store. Welcome to The Tome Gen Con 2010 Special Release, straight from the con. The Tome is a D&D news, reviews, and interview show, and I'm your show host, Jeff Greiner. And in these specials, I'll be releasing recordings from Gen Con during Gen Con 2010. That's right, I'm at Gen Con 2010 right now in a hotel room as I record this. And this is the generic intro that you're going to get to hear at the start of anything that I release during the con. It's generic, so I don't know what this episode's going to be about. It could be a panel recording. It could be an interview. You're going to have to look at the show notes at thetomeshow.com. to find out exactly what's going on here. I'm recording this intro just to let you know generally what's going to be on this episode, that way I can get it out as quickly as possible and don't have to write and record custom intros and what have you while I'm here at the con and trying to run around and get as much information and content as possible. So it's like going to be like you're at the convention, just with a few hour delay. I'll be recording more things than what I could possibly give you directly from the con, and I hope to release that throughout the rest of August 2010 in regular episodes. But some things just can't wait, and I want to get them to you as quickly as possible. You know what else can't wait? Mentioning our sponsor for this Gen Con 2010 special episode. I'm not going to do a pick of the episode for obvious reasons, but you should check out Noble Knight for new game books and old, dice maps or minis, selling books or buying books. Noble Knight can meet all of your gaming needs. After the ad here, you'll be sent directly into, well, whatever it is in this very special episode. Enjoy.
Noble Knight Games has been serving the needs of thousands of gamers worldwide since 1997. A huge selection of over 30,000 unique products, including discounts on most in-print games of up to 50% off or more. Noble Knight Games is the place for out-of-print RPGs, board games, war games, collectible card games, miniatures, and all things game-related. They ship worldwide and will purchase or trade your titles you no longer need, new, or used. Your satisfaction is guaranteed. Just visit www.noblenight.com or visit our website for direct access to thousands of new, out-of-print, and in some cases, one-of-a-kind items.
And now, we will open it up to your questions. And don't ask me what the component is. All right, we're going to try to go systematically around the room. And you can ask anything of us, and we may tell you it or not. We'll start over here.
On the preview, you didn't mention anything about miniatures for next year. Is there a miniatures line out for next year?
We're working on that, and I don't have anything concrete to tell you at this moment.
What's the question?
Oh, yes, I'm sorry, repeat the question. Yes. I forgot. Thank you, John. Repeating the question, I didn't see anything about miniatures in 2011. And as I said, yes, we're still trying to work some things out with miniatures. As you saw, we did some experimentation this year with the collector sets and the huge set. I love minis. I use them in all my games. There should be some stuff, but I don't have anything to tell you at this moment.
Is the Ravenloft role-playing game completely separate on its own, or is it something that you could integrate into D&D where you're...
Fully integratable.
Fully integratable.
Yes, sorry. Who wants to do this? repeating the question. I usually am good at this. It's too early. The question was, will Ravenloft be compatible or usable with your regular Dungeons & Dragons game? And the answer is yes. It is the core Dungeons & Dragons rules. It is set in a slightly different place because Ravenloft is just scary and different. It's in the Shadowfell, obviously. And it's meant for a different type of experience. But that said, yes, you can mix and match as you see fit. We are packaging it as its own thing just for marketing purposes. Right there.
A lot of really good products and stuff coming out. Nothing mentioned for DDI subscribers, and especially in the vein of adventure tools updates. Is there anything you can tell us about that?
Dragon and Dungeon continue. I should have had a slide on that. I forgot. Sorry. Other stuff, Our policy at the moment is I can't tell you it until it's ready.
Okay.
Nothing is quite ready.
But it's coming.
Yes.
There was an update to the adventure tools that came out, I believe, last week. In case you haven't seen it, there was an update to the adventure tools that came out last week that updated the monster builder so that it now uses the new monster format.
Thank you, Greg.
Just wondering if after Essentials, is everything going to be paperback, or are we going to be going back to the hardback format of books?
The question was, is everything paperback after Essentials? The answer is no. The only things I showed you that were still in paperback were the Nentir Vale and Heroes of Shadow. The Player's Handbook and the Hero Builders book are hardcover. Monster Vault and the others are in boxes. So we're going to have a mix of products. Hardcover, paperback, and box sets. I'm going to get you, but then I'm going to keep going backwards. Go ahead.
Is the Heroes of Shadow book, is that going to include the Assassin class, which was previously exclusive for DDI subscribers?
So the question is the Assassin going to be in Heroes of Shadow? We're going to keep the Assassin as an exclusive for DDI.
That said, when the Shadow book comes out, there will be new Assassin material on the website. And even with the release of the Essentials, we're doing a version of the Assassin and a version of the Revenant as essential characters, along with the release of Heroes of the Fallen Lands. Right there.
Are you going to release the previous seasons of encounters for those of us who can't fit it into their schedule?
Are we going to release the previous seasons of encounters for those who can't get there? I don't. Greg, you just did a seminar in that. What was the answer in there? Because I'm not sure.
At this point, the intent is that Encounters is a weekly program for intro players to try to sort of get them into D&D. That being said, anybody can still attend. There aren't any plans at this point to make that available online or anything, but can't rule anything out.
We'll gauge the interest and we'll figure out a venue if it looks like a lot of you'd like to see that. How many would like to see that? All right, I'll go back and talk to them. Right there?
What are you guys playing right now, D&D-wise or beyond D&D?
Quick.
So the question is, what are we playing D&D-wise and beyond D&D? I am right now playing in a campaign set in the Astral Sea. It's very Spelljammer-esque. We're at level 16. We're also about to start a playtest of the Gardmore Abbey adventure. I also have a Greyhawk campaign that runs at lunchtime that's been kind of intermittent because of schedules and everything. And I guess beyond D&D, I just played the Space Hulk card game last night, and we got all the rules wrong, but we still had a good time. And I blame Jeremy. He was the rules keeper. So. And he's not wearing his wizard shirt.
Myself, we've got several D&D games going on. We're also doing a lot of playtesting as well. Our favorite at the moment is the big battle game. We love playing that one. And StarCraft 2 is my big one lately, too.
So Monday nights, I run a game for Bill Rose, my vice president, and we're playing through the Essentials. And we're doing that. We're using Essential characters, and every week I let them level 5 levels because he likes to level quickly. So it's a rather, it's extreme D&D, and it's extreme because most of the players, Bill Rose is and those guys are all from the magic side of R&D, and they are very much optimizers. So they keep me on my toes, and they find all the things that we did wrong and have to fix. So they're very good at that. Thursday night is my long-running game that is running through our adventures, and we're in Death's Reach right now in that game, and that's a lot of fun. And then beyond D&D, I've been playing a lot of Castle Ravenloft and its follow-up games. I've been playing the Conquest of Nerath game. For computer stuff, I just went back to DDO to try it out. It's been a while since I've been playing Dungeons & Dragons online, so I'm back in there for a while to see what's going on. And I just finished a computer game called Alpha Protocol that I thought was pretty good. A little role-playing spy game.
I'm currently running, well, one regular weekly game. They're Paragon Tier. They're also in the Astral Sea, and trying to rebuild their world that they inadvertently destroyed. and then I have a monthly game that I run that hasn't met for the summer, so I guess we better get back to that. I'm also playing in Andy Collins' monthly D&D game. We are currently also in Paragon Tier, having a lot of fun. Outside of D&D, I've been known to play a little bit of World of Warcraft. Stop laughing. I just lost a bunch of hours to Defense Grid, which I recently discovered on Steam. It's a really awesome game. And we've been playing some Magic around the office more frequently in the last few months than we have in previous years.
Yeah, we have a Magic League that we've been participating in. I think we're mostly in it because Mike hoodwinked us into playing it. So that he could farm us for wins.
I gotta win my foil cards. I need my foil cards.
Yeah, but he doesn't play the Magic R&D guy.
Because they're actually good at the game.
In addition to the Magic League, I run a Celtic-themed D&D campaign where the heroes are trying to avoid having the world destroyed. Greg is one of my players. I also play in Chris Perkins' Monday Night Game, and that's been going on since before 4th edition came out. I also play in Mike's Lunchtime Game, and I'm waiting for you to actually restart the damn thing.
I get the Magic games in. Yeah.
And I've been playing StarCraft too.
I am in Jeremy's game, and he finds new ways every couple of weeks to thwart our attempts to save the world, as happens. I run a plane-hopping campaign that's been in the Feywild, the Shadowfell, and now they've gone on to Sigil. I've been looking at a little of the old Planescape books for that material for that. I have been attending D&D Encounters weekly since it started, both as a player and as a DM. I do a weekly Gamma World game that Trevor Kidd is in, and as I was saying earlier, he was the person that blew himself up to help take out the bad guys.
That's dedication.
I just really wanted to make another character.
And then I shot that character with a rocket.
Yes.
I also... I've been doing a lot of Magic with the internal league. I am part of the Grazing Lands for Mike. And oh yeah, Mike's Monday game.
Yes, thank you.
So yeah, the Astral Sea.
Anyone willing to invest in my Pathfinder?
If I play it, I'd tell you.
Yeah. We would happily tell you.
You know, third edition was a good game. But now I'm playing fourth.
Is there any plan to release the series of encounters from the Ultimate Elf from last Gen Con, like the feminine article? And that was the first question. And the second question is, are you guys planning on doing any support for the like the iOS, like the iPhone operating system for iPad for the character builder?
So the first question, we were going to release last year's Delve. Again, like with the Encounters season, at the moment there's no specific plan, but I'll take that back and we'll talk about it. As for other operating systems, like for the iPad and things like that, as I mentioned earlier, when it comes to digital stuff, we have learned not to say anything until the project is ready to ship. So I'm going to plead the fifth and tell you not at the moment.
Please work on it.
Please. I'm always working on stuff.
So, you know, by middle of next year, fallish, whatever, quarter three, we'll have something like, what, 4 or 5 books of monsters somewhere around there, right? Would you ever see yourselves putting out a book of skill challenge? Mm-hmm. Same thing, just because skill challenge is level independent. one, you just need lots of different formats to complement any game.
The question was, would we ever put out a book of skill challenges like we do Monster Manuals? Well, my first question to you guys is that something that Dungeon Masters out there want?
Yeah. As a player, yes, please.
For newbie DMs, yes, please.
Can I help?
All right, Mike, get on that. All right, come back around this way.
Have you guys done anything to have an alternative to the Parsa system that's ingrained into this edition?
I want to know if we have an alternative to the Parsa system for treasure allocation. Yeah, I'm going to let Steve answer this one.
Yes, I'm actually going to let Jeremy answer this one. Two more engines, more recently.
Well, in the DM kit, and not actually it appears in the rules compendium as well, we give the DM the option of, A, doing random treasure. So if the DM just does not have time to pick every piece of treasure, we've brought back the option of, hey, roll on the table.
I made them do that.
Yes!
But also... our suggestions for treasure allocation are different in the DM kit and also in the rules compendium because of our new rarity scheme. And so we give advice to the DM of giving out, you know, a certain proportion of common items versus uncommon items versus those, again, spectacular rare items.
Well, what about pricing?
Pricing has not changed. Although sell pricing has, if you for some bizarre reason want to sell off a rare item or an uncommon item, and there's actually someone who will buy it from you, you will get more gold than you would for selling a common item,
or more residuum if you dust it.
And you know, if you like the old system, it's still there and you can use it too.
Yes.
Back row.
Dark Summon. Oh,
back row.
What's the plan, if any, for Dragonlance?
Dragonlance continues to release novels, and anything else is beyond what I've talked about today, so I can't tell you. But there is a plan. anyone else in the back right there? Yes. Yes.
Now with Dark Summon material and character builder?
With the updates, it'll get there. Yeah.
Wait, when?
I don't know. Soon. It's usually the month after, right?
When then becomes now.
So Dark Sun in the character builder shortly, along its normal cycle. Did I miss another question? Did I didn't repeat? No. Right there.
I didn't see a whole lot of new races coming along, and your player strategy guide shows a glaring hole in the attribute combinations that you have. And I guess the secondary question to that, besides are you going to have a con-ant race, is are you going to retrofit the other races to have a choice on their secondary attributes?
Get Yankee.
Repeat all that.
All right. Well, I can repeat the part that I definitely know the answer to, which is the final question: will we retrofit the races and players' essentials to have the choice? Yes, we will.
So you also asked about new races. There are some new races in Heroes of Shadow.
Yes. Oh, sorry. Yeah.
But we also don't believe that we need to give you 700,000 races. So. We're trying a new thing.
I was more concerned with the combinations.
And with the combinations, the other part of your question was, will we ever see an Intercon race? You know, we don't have this big grid on the wall, and we don't feel the need to fill every box in that grid. If a good idea comes along, we'll consider it. But so far, a good idea hasn't come along just to fill a box.
For those of us who have most of the 4E stuff,
players have BDI subscriptions, group that's been together for a while. Of the essentials line, besides the rules compendium, maybe the Dungeon Tiles Master Sets, what other of those products do you expect that kind of a group to be looking at?
I think they want to look at them all. I didn't say buy them all. I said look at them all and see what's in there. There are new builds in the two-player books, and somebody's going to want something, you know. Some existing player is going to want to play a Slayer or add some of the Slayer's abilities to their fighter. For the Monster Vault, it's all kinds of new monsters. You know, yes, they're kobolds, but they're different builds.
So there's
of kobolds.
No real redundancy between the Monster Vault and what exists today in terms of the monster manuals.
Redundant. There are
the same types of monsters.
There are the same types of monsters, but they're new builds. There are some that we picked up because if this is your first thing, you need that kobold minion. But there are also new ones. The red box is just a nostalgia item. If you don't need to get it for your nostalgia's sake, you guys, the red box is not for you. Right? But if you do want it for your collection because it looks cool, please go ahead and get it. Right there.
Does the red box include Player's Handbook errata for the basic stuff?
The red box?
Yeah. Well, any of these types of stuff. Is all the errata worked in?
There is.
Repeat the question.
So the question is, does the red box or any of the essentials products incorporate errata? And the short answer is yes, in the sense that everything in the essentials is current. If we picked up something from the player's handbook or from some other power source book and it's reprinted in the essentials products, then that version is the current and correct version. If a previous power, like say Lightning Bolt for the mage, was reprinted and there are changes to it in the essentials line, an update is released for the player's handbook to say, okay, Lightning Bolt now has the evocation keyword, that's half damage on a miss, that kind of thing. The same way the magic missile now appears, and we just released an update for it, that version of it appears in the essentials products.
Also, the rules compendium contains the most current version of all of the general rules. So any updates we've issued for any of our combat rules or for conditions, which we have done, all of those updates are incorporated in the rules compendium.
Some material in Essentials was altered in formatting, but where there were mechanical changes, those will be appearing in a document that tells you, the players who are coming from that older material, what's been changed.
Let's see. I'm coming up, and then I'll come back around. Right there.
What was the thinking behind avoiding encountering daily powers with psionic characters?
Sure. So the question was like, what basically boils down to the shift in psionic power source away from encounter powers. So really, the idea was is we, and this is almost like basically a natural evolution to where we led to some of the essentials design. We looked after the first two players' handbooks. We had the power structure in place, and the feeling was, well, can we grow beyond this? Is it something more interesting, or not more interesting, something new and different that would be interesting to an established player that we can do that gives you a different experience playing a character? And when we looked at psionics, you know, in third edition, one of the really key things for psionics was the power points. That's something that, I mean, some people didn't like them, but a lot of people who did pick up psionics, and that's what they liked about it, they liked that flexibility. So we sat down and designed it, we really just want to say, look, what's, starting with the story of psionics in D&D, what's the best mechanic to reflect that? Not necessarily saying, well, this is the structure we have, let's fit psionics into that structure. We wanted to do the reverse. So that's really the thinking behind that.
Does Wizards of the Coast have any plans as far as the hardbound books to sell them as PDFs, ebooks, or access through DDI?
We're going to do PDFs or other books in some kind of electronic format. Right now, a number of our novels are being sold as ebooks. As for the game material, you're going to get my stock answer. We're working on it, but I'm not ready to tell you exactly what's coming. But we will be telling you shortly.
Well, will all the new essentials materials be incorporated into DDI? And you had mentioned
monsters having pictures with every monster so you can know what they were. In the monster builder, that's one of the things that drives me crazy is, I don't know what an abelisk is, and I have to look up, it's a mechanical crossbow. So, you know, I have them walking around with human figures, and one of my players goes, that's a crossbow.
So the question was, will we be incorporating this material into, the essentials material into DDI? Well, first, if you had the monster manual, you would
have
got a picture.
Every book you've ever
Isn't there a picture of the arbalist?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a picture in the in the book.
Right. I just saw the character stat and went, oh, that works well, and I used it.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Yes, we'd like to move toward having the art in there. That will come with an update in the future. As for the essentials into DDI, our normal updates will occur.
With the DMG, we got sort of an entrant into the heroic tier. And with the DMG 2, it took us into the Paragon and sort of taught us how to play Paragon tier. What can we expect for the Epic tier as far as DM support?
The question was DM support for Epic tier since we've done Heroic and Paragon. We were originally planning to do Dungeon Master Guide 3 with Epic tier actually last year, but we were noticing we were doing polls and not very many groups had reached that level yet, so it wasn't quite time. So we put that on the back burner. We will get to that probably in 2012, but there will also be article support on Dungeon and Dragon for Epic tier as we begin to build toward that. How many people how many people are still playing Heroic? Yeah, see, that's where most of the play is happening, why we're going back to Heroic stuff for next year. How many people are in Paragon? Pretty even. What about Epic? Yeah, there's not enough of you yet for an Epic book. Soon. Right there, first.
Using your highway analogy, are the essentials essentially just a finite group of materials then, or are you planning on expanding further in the future?
No, the essentials, I asked if the essentials are a finite group of products. Yes, there are 10 of them. That will, all there will ever be for the essentials is 10 products. After that, you go play with the rest of us.
Right?
Yeah. You go pro, yes. Over here. Right there.
I have a question, since it sounds like most of you DM. Something I've tried playing around with in my game is an alternate stun mechanic, since most of my players feel like losing a turn is just a little bit too harsh. I was wondering if any of you have tried to do something else for a stun mechanic.
Days also.
The question was, have we as DMs tried to do something other than stun, because that can be, well, not fun for certain characters. Yes, we have noticed that as well. We have actually begun working to limit the use of stun in our design space. It still has a place, but it shouldn't be every monster you fight at Paragon tier or Epic tier. We were even watching Dazed, although Dazed is not nearly as offensive because at least you still get to do something. And, you know, as the DM, it's even worse when the players do that to my monster. I don't like it. So from the DM point, I've created a bunch of monsters that stun doesn't quite affect them the same way, especially with solos. So instead of having a solo with 7 attacks, if you stun him, he goes down to 6 attacks. And my players have found that to be acceptable. and I find it to be more fun. So.
And along the lines of solos, I do kind of a similar thing where if I'm not using one of our newer solos that has a lot of the tech built into it that already accounts for maybe having the creature get extra saving throws or be able to nullify stun effects or whatever, my general rule for solos is that a stun is just a daze, and a daze is he loses a minor action or can't take immediates or something. Right? I try to downgrade it a little bit, for especially our earlier solo monsters, because they're a little bit more vulnerable to things like stuns.
One thing I would encourage all of you DMs to keep your group composition in mind when you're constructing encounters. If you have a particularly large group, you probably want to go really light on monsters that are stunning, because if your players are having to wait a long time for their turn to come around and they lose that turn, that it's like a, you know, a double punch in the gut. And so,
saltier than Popeye.
Yeah. And so, and that goes to the beauty of D&D, is that you can customize the experience as DMs. And you can do the same as players. If your whole group agrees, stunning just sucks, well, then the players can also start swapping out their powers that stun for powers that do something else.
You had shown off the Neverwinter campaign guide. Of course, there wasn't an equivalent player's guide component, so it looks like there's a bit of a change in philosophy on how you're going to do your yearly campaign stuff. I was wanting to talk about
that. Dark Sun chose that too.
The question was, have we changed our philosophy as to our yearly campaign setting, and as far as DM book and player book? And the answer is yes. You'll see with Dark Sun, for example, we put the player and DM material in the campaign guide, and then also did a monster book. And the reason was that, you know, we were getting feedback from the fans that they didn't like the separation. So we put them back together, and I think for Dark Sun it made a stronger book, and we're going to continue that in the future.
I have a follow-up on Neverwinter.
Yes.
Since you're doing a thing on Neverwinter, which the city, it's like a ghost town or something currently, right?
The question is Neverwinter a ghost town? No. The line in the book is that it was destroyed at some point. But it, in actuality, in the fiction of the world, it's been being rebuilt sometime between the destruction during the Spell Plague and the 100 years that have passed.
Okay. And are you going to be releasing a book that details Sharn? Or Eberron?
Oh, Sharn. Will we be doing a book for Eberron, for Sharn? It's certainly on our list, but we try not to do more than one of those expansions in a year. Mike, put it on the list. Anyone else back here before I move to this row? All right, back there.
First of all, my voice is a little bad, so in the product list for next year, I see that the new rules compendium, the subject thing, is that going to be a stopgap, kind of a measure, because of all the erratic and PhD 1, 2, and 3, you really have to collect a bunch of pieces of paper and play the game right? Is that going to, like, hold the ground until the core books get a reprint and a new look, or is that going to be a reprint of those books? Did that make sense?
All right.
Sure. So I guess the question is the rules compendium a stopgap for the errata for Player's Handbooks 1, 2, and 3? No. The rules compendium is a book of rules for the new player and for existing players that collects all the rules in a handy, small-size reference book. It does incorporate the errata, but when it's time to reprint the Player's Handbook, that will get its errata added as well. That's how we do reprints. Yes, so Jeremy wants to add to that.
Something to keep in mind about the Rules Compendium is the Rules Compendium does not include powers, for instance. And so I think when people think of errata, you're often thinking of changes that have been made to various powers, magic items, monsters, and whatnot. That material is not in the Rules Compendium. So it would be impossible for it to serve as a stopgap if that were even our intention. Yes, it's again the digest size book.
Yeah, 6x9, 320 page paperback book.
Follow up. So with these 22 pages of errata we're currently applying to the Player's Handbook, can we expect to see a reprint sometime in the near future?
And will you be able to show that it's a reprint on the cover?
Can we expect a reprint in the near future, and will we show it on the cover? Usually the way we indicate a reprint is on the copyright page. It'll say printing 1, printing 2, printing 3. I can't tell you how many are in our warehouse or when we're going to do another reprint. We do reprints, you know, when the time is right. And when the time is right, we'll announce that and we'll let you know. Go back over there.
The Essentials preview showed the fighter subclasses of Knight and the Slayer being different themes. There was the Defender and there were the Tracker. Is that a theme that's going to be extended to all the classes?
Yeah, so the question is, we have the Slayer as a striker, and the Knight as a defender as fighters. Is that something you're going to see more of? So this kind of goes back to what I was talking before, the design philosophy really starting with the world of D&D and what's going on in the fiction of the game. If you can imagine turning a D&D session into a movie, what's happening, what are those characters like? So I don't think we'll want to go and say, hey, let's make a cleric striker just for the heck of it. We'll want to start with saying we have a concept of something people want to play or do we think fits into a setting we're working on or is just an interesting concept in the game we want to cover. It's almost like at the end you start designing that, then you decide, well, what role fits this best? Instead of saying, hey, this is the role from the beginning, make everything fit into that box. The role is more of a wrapper that we say, what is the best wrapper to put around this that'll fit it best? So, for example, the striker is the fighter. You can think in a lot of fiction and just in D&D, there are fighters who just chop stuff in half or just really focused on offense, and so the Slayer is meant to fit that. You know, and so as we go forward, if we see a class where the concept of it, the fiction of it, it fits multiple roles, we're definitely going to look at that.
Ravenloft as a line has had a history of a lot of authors attached to it, a lot of big names, people are familiar with the target team. Are there any authors, I know this might be stretching a little bit into the future, but any authors that we know of that possibly have histories with the line that are being attached to the project?
It's too early for me to tell you about that.
All right.
The question was, are there any of the old school authors for Ravenloft being utilized? And it's too early for me to say.
Are there any updates or changes to RBGA in terms of structure, format, how it's going to run?
Question on, is there any changes to the structure of the way RPGA is being run? The biggest change that I'm aware of is that all of the OP programs that we are focusing on, like the encounters and the game days, are being now generated from my team so that they'll be more integrated with product. Beyond that, I don't know of anything else, but that's not to say there isn't. I would go ask Chris Tulock in Sagamore Ballroom. He's at the headquarters, and he runs that stuff, and he could tell you better than I could.
Are there any more plans for race-based books like the Tiefling and the Dragonborn?
Question if we're going to do any more race-based books like the Tiefling and the Dragonborn. Those were some of the ones that I had slides for that I cut out so that I could get to the Q&A. This year we did do two 32-page paperback books, one for the Dragonborn and one for the Tiefling. At the moment, we don't have additional plans. We're looking at our formats, and that particular format is hard for the stores to make use of. So I think we'll try to get more race information. Even with the Essentials, you'll see that we've expanded the content given over to race material.
Two sides of it. And just to throw and add an additional point to that topic, like, for example, in the Shadow book, there's a section on how each of the common D&D races views Shadow and folklore and stories surrounding it. So it's something we'll be spreading a little bit more out across the books we do.
Right there.
Each of the editions has had sort of their own PC or video game, which I've enjoyed, Neverwinter and Baldur's Gate. Does 4th edition have any plans for their electronic game?
The question is, do we have an electronic game coming that's going to be tied to 4th edition? Our partner on electronic stuff is Atari, and they're getting ready to make an announcement that I can't give you at the moment. So later this month, I believe that Atari will be making an announcement. Okay. Yes. Yep.
Yes, I was wondering on the heroes, you were talking about building customizing your classes. Will there also be a component for customizing some of the races that way? more specific.
Okay, the question is, will we also, we're going to customize classes, will we also be offering ways to customize races, like the half-elf? Mike?
In the Heroic Terror book we talked about, there are some options for customizing a race a little bit. I don't know if your exact examples are in that book yet, but it's something we're definitely looking at, to, if you want to give a tweak to existing race. Like, for example, if you have a dwarf, if you think, well, a mountain dwarf, like a Flint, Fire, Forge, and Dragonlance, versus a mountain dwarf. And I'm totally blanking on the name of the dwarf city, so I can't drop that as a reference. But
Hammerfest,
things like, oh no, in Dragonlance,
oh,
the one that shut down its gates, Thorbard. Yeah, exactly. So how in Dragonlance, there's a cultural difference between those two dwarves. If you want to explore that, we're giving you some options in the Heroic Tier book for that.
Right there.
You mentioned card products like the fortune cards and what have you, and coming in like booster pack styles. They're not intended to be used as collectibles. So are the packs randomized, or are we going to get the same thing in every pack?
Good question on the fortune cards. We're not meant to be collectible, but are they randomized? Yes, they are randomized because we want the surprise of... the whole point of these is to give surprise to your game. So ideally, you'd pick up one pack for an adventure, open it up at the table, and that's what you're playing with. You don't know what's in there, and neither does the rest of the group. You're not meant to go and buy a case, collect every card, build a deck, and come with a killer deck. That's not how they're designed to be used.
How many are there?
The fortune cards, there are 80, I believe, is what we're going with now.
80 in a set.
80 in the set, and then you get 8 in the booster?
Yes.
It's not that we don't want you to go buy all the cards. we are also putting in guidelines for if you do want to build a deck, if you do have you've managed to get a lot of cards because you've played encounters a few times and you've done something to gather a lot of boosters and you've got a lot of cards laying around, there are rules for how you build a deck and how to make sure that deck of 10 or 20 cards that you're going to use at the table isn't just, here's the 20 cards that work best with my character. My character likes to, knock people down, so I'm just going to take the 20 cards and say, hey, knock somebody down this round, and you get, plus 5 damage or something like that. You're just not going to put all those cards in your deck. You're not going to be allowed to, basically. We're going to try to spread around the ability to do things for yourself, to do defensive actions or attack maneuvers, or even help your teammates out a little bit.
All right, we're going to give you guys two more questions. Who's got good ones?
Guy in the hat? Question, no problem.
For the non-essential classes, the ones that aren't going to be revisited in the essentials products, I'm thinking of like the Artificer or the Avenger, are we going to see just material and DDI for them? Are we going to see expanded builds, like the Artificer is still limited to just 2. Are we going to see a Divine Power 2, Arcane Power 2?
So I can't speak about specific products that we haven't previewed yet, but for example, the Warlord, the Warlord's not covered in the 2 Players Essentials books, but there's an article of the Warlord coming out in October or November, I'm not sure which. So we are going to keep supporting those. It's really just a matter of finding, like I said before, the stories is driving things a bit more now. So it'll be about where does it make sense for this to come up. So we don't necessarily sit down and say, hey, the Artificer hasn't gotten a build in a while, we need to do something. It'll be more like, well, we have a great pitch from a freelancer, or hey, in this book it'd make a lot of sense to cover that. But essentially, those classes are on the same level as any class we're doing in Essentials or anything like that. So,
yeah, just keep watching. We'll get around to your favorite as soon as we can. All the way in the back.
We've got 2 awesome books out on Elemental Chaos and Astral Sea and a cool-looking box set for the Shadowfell. Are we going to see anything for the Feywild?
The question is, are we going to see anything for the Feywild? The answer is yes. But I haven't showed it to you yet. So I didn't say that. And I'm going to give you guys one more because those were quick.
When we look at the Ravenloft product coming up, should we be thinking of that as a campaign setting like Dark Sun or like a game like Game of World? Which one is it more akin to?
The question is, will Ravenloft be more like a campaign world like Dark Sun or a game like Gamma World? The answer is yes. To be less funny, You can use it as a campaign setting, but it's also a standalone game. It's cool. All right, one more. I'm a softy today.
Thank you. We have Dungeon Annual, we have Dragon Annual. Any possibility of a soft cover or Rata Annual that way it's in an organized format?
You know, I've elevated the question is, are we going to have a Rata Annual? You know, I just promoted Mike to the position of running the role-playing material for me so I can do some other stuff. And his first task is to stop making us have a Rata. It's not going to be... We're never going to get away from that happening. This is a living game. You people help us find mistakes or improvements that just need to be made. But our goal is to reduce that. And that's Mike's number one job. And also development's number one job. One more and then we're done.
That's a tough one.
Oh.
I like them.
All right.
I know.
I seriously, you can ask my roommate, my friends, I buy every one of your books that come out, all of your material that comes out, even the first Dungeon Master screen. I take them, I flip through them, and I put them on my shelf. I never go back to them. I rely heavily on EDI. All of my players use Character Builder and so on. In the future, do you see Wizards moving more towards an electronic format where errata are included, updated every month? Do you see the Wizards strengthening the DDI concept, or is it, I mean, it's been kind of sidelined, so it's not sidelined, but it's secondary to your print material. Do you personally envision that ever changing?
Question is, to sum up, let me sum up. Do we see the electronic area, the digital stuff, surpassing or overtaking or replacing the analog product? Is that a fair version? I hope not. I like them to be equal. I'm a big fan of the printed product. But we're also watching the way the world is going. And we are going to take advantage as we can of the digital space as well. And hopefully both will be standing side by side for many, many years to come. And Mike wants to say something.
So one of the things I talked about in like the Shadow Book and stuff was putting in more world background, more story. My goal with that is to make the D&D books more fun just to read. That I mean, this is a weird goal. I mean, weird way to put it, but I want people to feel like this is great bathroom reading. Like, if you're a D&D gamer, you're gonna have the here's a Shadow Book. You know, that's something you want to bring to the bathroom. It's just fun to read. Yeah, so kind of attractive. That's just how it's just something engaging where you're not just putting it on the shelf and forgetting about it because it's just digital. I mean, like Bill said, the world's changing and digital tools becoming more and more pervasive. And I think it puts more pressure on the book to be like a book. It's just a physical artifact that's just fun to page through. That's like the old DMG from AD&D where you're always finding something new in there. It's like a little bit of a labyrinth in a way. I mean, hopefully not like a labyrinth that can't find anything, but you're always finding little tidbits and nuggets of story and D&D lore. So it's just enjoyable to sit and flip through that book on a Sunday afternoon.
My fear in that aspect, though, is that the mechanism we use to promote our books is to make sure that we don't put all of our good stuff electronically.
So yeah, our goal will be that the two will work together.
Yes.
And where it's not quite there yet, but we're trying and we're working toward it. And with that, I'm going to end this for today. Thank you very much for attending. Rest of the day. The rest of the day, the next event in here is the Dark Sun Seminar at 1 o'clock. Again, my signing down at the author's area. Come on by if you're available. At 2 o'clock, what's in here at 2 o'clock? Is that R.A. Salvatore's in here at 2 o'clock? And at 4 o'clock is the Gamma World Seminar. So plenty of stuff still to do, and go check out the events in the Sagamore. Thank you all.